What does the future of eye care look like? Are you afraid of innovation and technology? What does the future doctor of optometry look like? What does the future doctor of ophthalmology look like? On today's show, we have all the answers. We have a great perspective from a student and soon to be optometrist. He's going to make sure that you're not lost in the sauce anymore and understand the future of eye care. Friends and family, we're going to tap in with Easy Ayama. Tune in today on the Defocus Media Podcast. Let's go.
This is a Defocus Media production. What's up, everyone? It's your favorite optometrist, Dr. Daryl Glover.
And I'm Dr. Jennifer Lyerly, resident optometry nerd.
And welcome to Defocus Media, optometry's number one podcast, where we discuss the hottest topics, latest technology, eyewear, practice management, and more. So sit back, relax, and defocus.
What's up, everyone? It's your favorite optometrist, Dr. Daryl Glover. Super excited about today's show because we truly do have a star. And we have a star that has really changed the game of optometry from being a student. Yes, you heard me right. A student optometrist that has changed the game. And he hasn't even stepped out to the real world to begin to practice. So that speaks volumes. And I consider him truly an expert when it comes to technology, innovation, and believe it or not, what the future of eye care looks like. And the reason why I say this is because he's in the trenches right now with the students. He is a leader. He has been the president of the AOSA. Friends and family, I want to welcome my brother, my guy, Easy. How are you doing today, Easy?
The best optometry podcast. So whenever I can get on here, it's a good time.
Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate you tuning in with me today. Today is going to be super special just simply because of your insight, but most importantly, because of your passion for eye care, right? I come across a lot of brilliant minds in eye care, and I can honestly say you are one of them. The way that you look at eye care, the way you look at legislation, the way you look at innovation is truly unmatched. I feel like you're ahead of your time, to be honest with you, my man. So I'm super excited to really dive in deep and just pick your brain and learn a little bit more of how you process things, but also how you feel the future of optometry will be. But before we jump down this journey, before we take this trip down easy lane, let's get to know a little bit more about you, my friend. If you don't mind maybe taking us back to the beginning, man. Where are you from? Give us a little background of your name and kind of walk us through that journey of why you jumped into optometry and where you attend school now as well, if you don't mind, my friend.
Oh, no, I'd love to. So for starters, my name's Easy Ayama. Unfortunately, I wish there was a good story for why my parents named me Easy, but I think my dad just thought it'd be cool to hear. So he gave me that name. My last name is Nigerian. It actually means the eye knows. It's kind of cut off, which is interesting. That's where that's from. So maybe there were some early optometry roots there. But my journey to optometry started actually when my athletic career ended. So I played Division I football.
Okay.
Division I track, then football. And I was training for the NFL. And during that time, training cost a lot of money. And so I needed a job. And no one would hire me except for my college town's optometrist, Dr. Steven Stanfield. And he kind of showed me the ropes. It looked like a good time. He had a great patient rapport. It was just like something I didn't know existed in the world of optometry. Everyone in my family is in medicine. So when I'm thinking healthcare, I'm thinking medicine. So to have that experience really kind of changed things for me. And then I got a chance to kind of dive deeper into the extra in optometry. And you learn about all these things, all the eye care disparities, all of the people who've worked hard to make sure patients are taken care of. And that kind of pushed me closer to optometry. I can't say I was ready to pull the trigger. I thought I was going to be an NFL player.
Okay.
But it definitely helped. So then when I got cut from Seattle Seahawks, I was like, you know what? There's nothing to it but to try to go to optometry school. So I put the work in and got into the University of Houston.
Wow. That's fantastic, man. So like, this is a completely different ball game, if I could say, from where you initially were, you know, heading, right? And now I'm going to say, welcome to the good side, right?
Yeah.
You're in the best profession where we get to help people. Like I always say, the most precious sense known to mankind, which is sight. And you get to impact lives day in and day out. And you have the opportunity to make sure that your colleagues are seeing well on that football field. That way they can function at a high level as well. So I'm glad to hear about that background. I'm glad that you're on the show. I mean, today I really want to dive deep into, you know, the future of optometry, the future of eye care, because I've had some conversations with you. And when I have conversations, a lot of times I kind of know the answers that someone's going to give me, or you can anticipate things. But the answers you gave me were completely different from what I've heard from a student. So it really intrigued me. And I was like, man, I got to bring them on the show and have this conversation. But today I really want to have a conversation really in three different areas. Number one, you know, the future doctor. What does the next generation of optometrists look like, and how is it going to be different? And I think this is huge, because right now there's a major shortage of optometrists, right? And we got to know what that optometrist is going to look like. That way us as employers know how to cater to that demographic and bring them in and make them feel comfortable. That way they can practice to the best of their capability in full scope optometry as well. So that's one area. The other area I want to touch on is really representation. You know, the importance of showing up and what that means for our profession. I know you've had a history of, you know, being a head man over at the AOSA and making a big impact and making a change, not just, you know, internally within the AOSA, but really throughout the entire profession. I have seen optometrists, seasoned optometrists, sit down and listen to you speak and really just bob their head, and like you really resonated with them in regards to the message that you communicated. And then lastly, something I know that you're very passionate about is innovation, yep. Right? I think innovation is a big piece of eye care, and I think it's important for us to own innovation. And I think it's great when young, bright minds like yours have your antennas up and you're fully aware of that, and you want to control that space and make your own contribution to that space as well. Absolutely. So, EZ, let's take it from the top, man, and let's talk about the future doctor. I mean, what does this look like? I'm going to let you kind of take the baton and run with it today, if you don't mind, my friend.
Yeah, no problem. I think generally I break down the eye care day, the day of the optometrist, in three parts, really four. There's the entry, the patient finds out about the practice. They, you know, they come in, however they do that. Then they start the exam, it's data collection. Okay. And that's where optometrists have almost been. And then we have a little bit of data analysis, or a decent amount of data analysis, where we analyze that data and make our diagnoses. And then finally you have patient outcomes, where, you know, you help the patient compliance, adherence, treatment, whatnot. I think that you get the shift with the future doctor in the way we practice, where we do less data collection, primarily because of technology, because of expanding scope, just because of who we are becoming. And you go deeper into the data analysis and further into the patient outcomes, you know, and I think that's where it's headed. So that's exciting for me.
Yes.
It's definitely something I think about. But then on the other end of things, you have the current student, more debt than ever before. There's a shortage of eye care providers, as you mentioned. So we're going to have to see more patients, probably faster, probably at an increased complexity, and then still keep that quality of care. And so that's a completely different area where, you know, you're going to have to find a way to kind of, like you said, take the reins to ensure that doctors coming out who probably are going to fill this wave are prepared for this, while still managing having a lifestyle, because that's a whole different conversation, Dr. Glover.
It is, man. It is. And I see it day in and day out. You know, I have the blessing and opportunity to work with a leader in eye care, which is my eye doctor. And, you know, I get to talk to new graduates, students, seasoned ODs all day. And one of the big topics is definitely quality of life, right? Work-life balance. And, you know, I'm all about work-life balance, but I also got into this profession because I want to help people. And sometimes, you know, we do get a little lost in the sauce, and, you know, we're more concerned about what is our pay, when are we going to get off, when at the end of the day, it's all about the patient that's sitting in front of you. Right. And to your point, you know, new graduates, being that there is an aging population, there are more patients, the demand is there. You know, how can you become quicker, smarter, faster, and work through these difficult days that we have in front of us in regards to optometry? Because ophthalmology is not really growing. We're slowly growing. So there's a lot of work that's ahead of us, and we got to be there for our patients.
Right. Absolutely. And I, even in the education, I do think people are wanting to practice in a unique way as well. I still haven't grasped how that's going to play a role, where people want to be specialists in a certain area and they want to be known for a certain thing. And it's like, I don't know if that takes away from the demand or the need for eye care providers. If someone's a specialist, but we need people in the trenches of rural, Arkansas, or if that helps, I'm unsure, but I think that's something interesting to come as well.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But let's dive a little deeper into this. So the next generation of ODs, they might be different, right? Mm-hmm. So we know we touched a little bit on the work-life balance, but give me a little bit more inside of your mind and what your colleagues are thinking. Like, if I'm a new OD that's coming out, what am I looking for? Like, what are the main things that these new graduates are looking for to make them feel comfortable with being in that exam lane and finding the right solutions and truly doing this until they're ready to retire? What are they looking for? How are they different from what's out there now?
I would say it's a lot more paying off my loans, being financially secure while not working. I don't want to say not working hard, but not working as often as in the past. So some time for a vacation, you know, kind of instead of buying back your time when you retire at 65, docs these days or new grads are likely looking to enjoy some of that early on. I'm more of the exception in this crowd, but it's very interesting to see. And I respect it. I respect it because it makes a lot of sense, you know, and optometry school is no easy venture, as you know. So after, it's like, spend some time for yourself, really self-care. I'm really, I guess seeing what else there is to you on your free time. Like, that's just a big thing.
Yeah, it's huge, man. And I get it. I mean, people want to travel. They want to turn up. They also want to get a big bag of money. But, you know, honestly, it's difficult to enjoy the best of both worlds, right? You know, with that being said, let me ask you this. What does that mean for the independent doctor of optometry, that private practice? What does that mean? Because when you look at something like that, how can you truly build a practice if you're, you know, I'm not going to say not present, but not willing to put in those 6 or 7 days for X amount of years to be able to turn over that profit and grow that practice and build that loyalty? Do you feel like we're going to see less folks going the private practice route and more corporate optometry or more a group of private practices? I mean, what does that look like? And what does the conversation look like at school as well?
Yeah, I can absolutely see more corporate route, more group practice. The very thought of cold starting, I don't know if I've had a conversation about that in a long time. But I do think that the independent practitioner today really could get back to the basics of what good business is, right? It's like developing a relationship early, often. A lot of times now I see this thing where it's like doctor or students are kind of afraid to talk to doctors because they think like, oh, this is this doctor, they're, you know, important. And doctors kind of think the students are a bit standoffish.
Yeah.
And there's this huge disconnect. And so I think that if those things come together and people start building these relationships over time, you'd be able to trust that, hey, independent practice is the way to go sometimes, or it's the right thing for me. Yeah. So that's what I'm hoping happens. But for now, it's where we are.
Yeah. So, I mean, for what I'm hearing, when a student comes out, number one, one of the major concerns is definitely student debt. I don't recall what the latest numbers are, but I think they were north of like 200, 250K or something like that, which is a lot. Now, I will be honest, there's students out there coming out of school, you know, depending on where you're practicing, that can make, you know, north of 180 or 200 if they're in rural Arkansas and different places, like you were saying before. But of course, if you're in, you know, areas where it's highly concentrated, then you're not going to make as much, right? It's supply and demand at the end of the day. So there are opportunities to build that. But, you know, I think optometry, we all know, was built off of private practice. Right. And there's a lot of big groups out there doing some amazing things, building private practices, but just doing it at scale. Mm-hmm. My eye doctor just represented my brand. I got nothing but love for him, right? But I think it's important to have conversations like this so that all eye care professionals know what students are looking at. And right now it sounds like time, student loan repayment, right? It sounds like quality of life.
Exactly.
Work-life balance, right? Yep. These are the key things that we're seeing here. And I see you got some of your AOSA people out here Shout out to Ian and Nathan. Fantastic guy. I had the opportunity to see him, I think, over in Oklahoma. Is he in Oklahoma? Is that right?
Yeah.
I remember. Yeah. Right. And shout out to Eric for always representing and being a part of all these conversations. He's saying, yes, we need to strive for more accessibility and approachability. I agree with that 100%. You know, we are at a place where there's no reason for anyone to be standoffish. I think, to your point, if doctors and students come together, it will make the profession stronger. There's a lot of knowledge and mentorship that seasoned doctors can give students. But at the same time, just like this conversation here, there's a lot of game and knowledge that students can give to optometrists that are seasoned, right?
Yeah.
It goes both ways.
Well, and like you're saying, supply and demand, but you know, it's also like supply chain. I do think that there's some aspects of practices in rural America that students will never see, or they never are introduced to, so they have no concept of them. You know, when they hear practicing in a rural part, all they think of is the rural area. They don't even know what it looks like. Right. You know, so I think that that's a big thing. Like, compared to what is, I think, an advantage that rural practices will be able to take it to use in the future, where it's like, sure, it's rural, but compared to what? You're making more. You can practice how you want to. You can see more complex patients. You can get ownership in a practice. I think those are huge advantages that rural practice can take advantage of.
Yeah, I mean, you have the opportunity at your fingertips. People need those positions filled. So why not shoot for the stars, right? Make the magic happen. Ball's in your court. You know, I want to kind of switch gears here a little bit, and I want to touch on this second topic, which was representation, the importance of showing up and doing your part in optometry. And I mentioned in earlier, and you said you love him. I'm assuming, like a brother from another mother, I had an opportunity to really have a conversation with him. And you're talking about another bright mind. Look, I'm so happy that the future of optometry is in great hands, because I've been able to have conversations with you, conversations with Ian, conversations with Brooke, conversation with Jeffrey Wilson. There's some stars for the future of eye care that's going to really change the game. So everyone listening, if you don't know these names, be sure to connect with them, because they're going to make you happy and they're going to push this profession forward. And in order to push this profession forward, we have to have representation. So kind of walk me through, I really would like to kind of take it back to when you first got into optometry school. What made you want to really get into this side of eye care? Because a lot of people just go to school, they put their head down and they just focus on their work. You took the other route. You did your schoolwork, but you also wanted to be a leader and you wanted representation there. So if you don't mind kind of walking me through that journey of what that looks like and where you see it going as well.
Yeah. So for me, I'm a huge admirer of people. I'm big on people. Like, I don't know, I'm the last child of five. I don't know if like I just have no room to have an ego or something, but I just admire people. So honestly, it's just been the people in the journey who have just inspired me to step up.
I love it, man.
I mean, there's so many, that's been the difference maker. That's kind of got me out of my shell. Sometimes an interesting thing, a representation from being African-American, is that sometimes I you'll think yourself out of doing something, you know, and you don't realize until, you know, that you can just do it. Like, there is no barrier there. So it took meeting some great doctors who inspired me to step up. And I think that's what it's going to take for the future. I don't think it's as much. I don't think it's as difficult as people might think. It's as simple as, hey, have you considered being an optometrist? Hey, have you considered being a leader? Hey, do you realize that whatever is unique about you, optometry needs and will be worse without? I think that's a huge one. Like, how often do you find a random guy who loves AI, optometry, played football? And in my mind, I'm like, I don't know how useful that's going to be. But you got me on the number one podcast, so that's what it takes. That's the secret sauce that everyone should just know. Like, you don't have to do anything special. You just show up, and that is necessary. It's needed.
And I love that, because, you know, what I'm hearing is we all have a story, right?
Right.
How can we lead with that story and connect with that person that's sitting in front of us, right? Your football story can connect with anyone that's an athlete, right? Your love for technology can connect with any tech junkie that may walk into your office, right? Absolutely. It's just all these little things that we take for granted, but the person that's sitting in front of us, can that conversation, the way we connect, can really elevate that doctor-patient relationship. So representation counts. Now I want to jump a little bit, you know, outside of the exam lane and more on the legislative piece, because I know you've had a big part in what's been taking place with students over the last couple of years. And maybe you can kind of give us the pulse of what's going on with the AOSA, you know, where they're going. I know there's a new leader there, but, you know, if there's any opportunity for any folks out there to connect or partner with them, maybe kind of give us an overview of what's cooking up for those that may not be aware.
Yeah. So the AOSA, we've really come a long way. So, but honestly, we didn't go too far. We actually went back to our mission.
Okay.
Empowering students to thrive as doctors of optometry. That is what we now have become. That's what me and Nathan can say we left as our legacy. And so that's what we do with the AOSA now. If there's a student and there's something they want to know and it's not in the classroom, my hope is that they point to the AOSA. And that's what we do in all our programs and our events, getting students to come to OM, which I believe was the largest OM ever.
Yeah, man. Was it like over 2,000 students, right, or something like that? That's crazy.
It was incredible. But just so that's what the AOSA is really focusing on. I call it the big four for students. It's student loans, scope expansion, MBEO, and networking. So a lot of times AOSA, like, how can we target those? How can we get the resources to students? How can we represent students? And additionally, though, we did start a new media platform. Really, we revamped it, optometrystudents.com.
Okay.
And so that's something that if anyone wanted to get involved with, they would reach out to me. I'm serving as the editor-in-chief now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, get some articles up and just share your story, share what makes how you practice special, or share what you love about the profession and inspire someone who's probably the little version of you.
You know. I love that, man. I love that. And, you know, when it comes to the AOSA, clearly president, leader, I'm curious to know, how did football, you know, being on the field impact you being in the exam lane, but also being a leader in regards to the AOSA? Were there any skills that you were able to take from that and apply to the position that you held and what you do now?
Absolutely. Some of my trustees don't know, but some of the things we did were from football, you know, some of the rah-rah exciting stuff. So that's always good there. In the exam lane, I think football teaches you that no matter where someone's from, you can't really predict who they are or what they'll be. They take 100 guys from all over the country, put them on a team, and a year later, they all love each other. You're all brothers. Yeah. It's just, you can't beat that. So I think that's definitely how I see patients.
And that's you.
Yeah, there just is no background thing. It's just like, who are you today? Like, I know that there's something about you that I will admire or just enjoy, or like, you deserve the care. And as far as the AOSA side, really just being a selfless leader.
Mm. Man, you got to say that one more time, man. I want everyone in the world, let that echo. What kind of leader is that?
Selfless leader.
Woo!
Because just like football and the AOSA, you can't just fire someone. You have to make sure everyone's operating in whatever their talent is, and then do what you can to be sure that they can get the job done. You know, all the fault lies on the leader, in my opinion. And that's just how it goes, period. So that's a huge thing I took from football to the AOSA.
And I love that, especially when it comes to the exam room or to the office level, because you want to make sure that your team members in the office are doing what they're great at. Yes, they can be cross-trained, but if they're doing what they're great at and what they love, they're going to excel at a high level. And that patient journey, that patient experience, that doctor-patient relationship and experience is going to excel on levels that no one can even imagine. It's very important to make sure you understand who is a part of your team and what they're great at as well. So I love how you could just take, you know, the world of football, which, I'll be honest with you, man, I don't know crap about football. All I know is when the Super Bowl show up, I'm going to a Super Bowl party, having some good drinks and good food.
Yeah.
That's it for me, man. I grew up in North Carolina. We do basketball up here.
Oh,
so that's
man.
What I love. You know what I'm saying? But when a Super Bowl party comes, I'm watching the halftime show and I'm out with my wife. You know what I'm saying? But
yeah. No,
I love how you took that part and just applied it to eye care as well.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just so relatable. It's like, yeah. It's one of the best things. it sounds odd that, yeah, football prepared me for optometry, but I really feel that way. I truly feel that way. So, and I'm grateful for the experience.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, let's switch gears, man. I know you're all about, trying to shift the mindsets of, you know, our colleagues when it comes to innovation and technology. I know you're really big in, can we revolutionize optometry? Can we control the technology that comes in? What is it going to look like 5-10 years from now? So I really would love to pick your brain about this. And I know this is a passion point. So let's just take it from the top, man. Just kind of walk me through, you know, maybe what you see now, okay, where we're going. And then let's also touch on some of the technology that you're bringing to the profession as well.
Okay, that's awesome. Yeah, so I guess where we are now is surprisingly good. Optometrists are very afraid of technology. I have no idea why, because healthcare, the only health professional that uses tech more than us, I believe, is radiology.
Ah.
So you have optometrists who use I mean, that's why I got in. One of the reasons, I liked all the gadgets and whatnot, but we use a lot of technology. The difference, I think, though, is that we tend to accept the technology as it comes to us.
Mm.
We don't actually get to make our own technology. Or we do, but not as much as I think we should. And so that's kind of my big thing. It's like, why not have the domain experts make the tools for that domain? And so a big thing there I do see is things like AI, things like 3D printing, telehealth, big data. These are all areas where people are spending tons of money on.
Yeah.
But if you look at how much is being spent in optometry, I can't say it's comparable.
Wow.
And I want to say a lot of times when it comes to AI, they're going to make tools for ophthalmology. And so there's always that thought in the back of your mind, well, where they circumvent optometry completely.
Yeah.
You know, make a tool in a kiosk in a mall and then refer it to an ophthalmologist. It's like, we don't have to have that happen. When you go on Amazon, you look at the reviews, and that's that simple statement shows how much people matter and how much the care you provide matters, despite all the tools and tech.
Great point.
I don't think optometry is going anywhere. And I think that there's a saying I love that's like, technology is not going to take jobs away, but it's going to take jobs away from the people who don't use technology. So it's like, ooh, the people who use the technology are going to be fine.
Right, right.
The people who don't won't. And I think that that's hopefully not the parallel with optometry, but a possible one.
Yeah. And the thing is, man, like when it comes to technology, I mean, it's going to increase the pace in the office. It's going to streamline the exam. It's going to make that patient journey better. And the thing that we have to realize is that our patients want this. They are demanding this.
Right.
You can think this device here for creating this type of mindset. You can think COVID for creating this type of mindset, right? So, you know, these are things that we have to look at and keep in mind, and we have to meet the patients where they're at. If we're not meeting them where they're at and not giving them the demands that they're asking for, we're going to lose these patients, and we may lose them to technology that's not so great, that's not owned by eye care professionals. And that's where you're going to see a turn for the worse when it comes to technology and innovation in eye care. So I'm like you, man. I got the same mindset. How can we own it? How can we control it? How can we narrate the story in regards to what it looks like inside of our offices, but also outside of our offices as well?
Right. And there's a great definition for technology I love, and it's that it's just a tool we don't quite understand completely yet. It's like, okay, a car was technology at one point, even oil was technology, where we just didn't understand it. So that's the only thing separating optometry from using a lot of these tools or utilizing them, just tinkering with them and finding out how to make them work best. So I think that a cautious embrace is always what I say, an optimistic, excited, cautious embrace. I think that'll be the best recipe.
Nice. So let's get into some of this technology, right? I mean, I've seen everything from, you know, AI that can help code better, AI that can help detect diabetic retinopathy, glaucoma, AI that can scribe for you. Like, there's all types of different technology that's out there. But, you know, as a student, you know, what makes you feel good? What makes you get excited? What makes you say, I can't wait to use that when I get out to practice? Kind of what's your mindset of what you see out there that's truly the next major wave?
I think definitely some definitely optometry-centric AI. And so every piece of AI runs off the data. And so we get these huge swaths of data from different places, and the AI works, but it doesn't quite work. If you use like a ChatGPT, sure, if you ask an optometry question, it'll get some right, but a lot of times it won't. Or it won't give you the answer in the way you wanted it best. You know, so I think that that's really the most exciting. Once we get a lot of optometry data and we start making tools based off that data, predictive tools, just even scheduling patients, just entire workflows are just streamlined. It's all based on just understanding what the profession does, how we work, and building those tools for the profession. Not adjacent, not Google Palm making a huge, you know, medical tool and then using it for optometry applications, but a specific optometry tool. I think that'll be beautiful. It's like a little dream of mine.
Well, and I think it's a dream, but, you know, I've watched you from afar and I've had, you know, great, good, intimate conversations with you as well. But, you know, you have a interesting mind, and you're an entrepreneur as well. And I know you got some things cooking up on the back end. I mean, I've seen you on social media and some of the technology that you have your fingers on. I would love for you maybe to share some of the various things that you've done as a student and share with the world as well, because I know you got some cutting edge technology that's out there.
Yeah. So I actually started a couple of projects. I think a startup is a project that you get co-conspirators with and y'all just work together. And so one of those with Nathan is called Maxwell. And so what Maxwell does, it detects abnormalities in retinal fundus photos. You know, and the idea is, as we're seeing more and more patients, especially with telehealth, you know, people are seeing ridiculous amounts of patients. A new doc needs to be sure that their back's covered if something's, you know, missed, or just they're just overwhelmed.
Right.
So the thought there is that something like Maxwell would help. By the time the doctor sees the photo, it's already kind of highlighted areas of abnormalities on the retina, drusens, hemes and whatnot, and kind of help there. So that's something we're excited about, and we can't wait to develop. On the next end, there's a tool I'm still developing. It's almost done. We're starting beta testing. It's called Irvin.
Okay. It's a
reference assistant for eye doctors and their staff. And it allows you to pretty much combine half the tools we use into on the all-in-one shop, where like,
wow,
your contact lens reference, your path reference, your billing and coding, your medication calculations, just anything. You just tell it what you want and it'll give it to you. I'm super excited about that.
And this is what you mean by optometry centric or optometric centric, right? Yeah. It's really taking all the information in optometry. Mm-hmm. Not the outside noise, but housing all that information in one place where it can almost create like a cookbook or protocols or workflows to really make that journey in the exam room or in the office great from a patient standpoint, but also from an eye care professional standpoint, whether it's the optometrist, optician, front desk, mm-hmm. manager, whoever it may be. That journey on both ends is smooth and seamless. Is that what I'm hearing when you're talking about?
That's exactly right. It's the FUBU equivalent for us by us.
Ooh, I like that, man. Shout out to FUBU and LL2J for representing that brand. I guess you're going to be the guy that's going to be the LL2J, but also the designer behind it as well, right? So that's fantastic, man.
Yeah. But that's exactly right. And even rolling into the business aspect of optometry. Tools that can help optimize that, KPIs, help you understand your data, even rolling into the research side of optometry. So you get a lot of studies, you know, that you can, if you can get enough data, you might get some insight there. I mean, there are tons of applications, honestly, but.
I like that. And I don't know if this is out, but it may be, because then there's all types of technology out there. But I like the business aspect, the KPI aspect. Something else I would like to throw in there is maybe being able to break down a P&L.
Right.
So imagine that, right? If you get mm-hmm. that on a monthly, quarterly, annual cadence, and you're able to plug that in and it analyzes it and it looks at your KPIs or it looks at your cost of goods and it looks at your controllables, non-controllables, top line, bottom line, all that jazz, and they're able to break it down and tell you where you need to improve and what mm-hmm. you need to do to get to that point. That's a game changer, right?
You're on my product roadmap right now, Dr. Glover. Oh, really? Don't say too much. No, I'm kidding.
Because when you think about it, the one thing is, you know, when it comes to business, schools don't teach that, right? I'm blessed to know a little bit about this because of the organization I'm a part of. You know, our whole purpose is to help patients live their best lives. And the only way we can do that is by truly understanding the data. So they really invest in us as doctors to understand, yes, the clinical piece, and we own that exam lane, but we also understand the business aspect, exactly. Right? And that's one of the reasons why I love the organization that I'm a part of over at My Eye Doctor. But to be able to have some type of technology to help to assist that so I don't have to waste brain cells on it, Exactly. Maybe check over it here and there. Yep. That's a game changer, man. That's how you can have an efficient practice, a profitable practice, but most importantly, a happy patient.
Absolutely. Number one thing. And then on the patient end, it's a different type of technology, but I was doing research on a 3D printed label that goes on Okay. Medication bottles for patients with low vision so that they can detect their medication from touch alone. So a lot of people don't know, well, we should, you know, 90% of the blind population don't know Braille. Like if you came blind at 50, you're not going to magically learn Braille. And so there's struggles that come with that. So that's where this device comes from.
Gotcha.
And I'm hoping that it gets distributed in about a year or so.
Nice. Well, you know, innovation, representation, the future doctor. I mean, I don't know when your brain shuts off, man. It seems like you're going full time and being a student and soon a BOD. That's a lot to process, man. You know, there's a lot of students out there that look like you, that potentially think like you, and they want to, you know, get to where you are at right now, right? And I think one of the main questions they have is probably time management. How are you able to manage your time as a student and have all these different initiatives and be a leader as well? Because that's a big deal, man, to be able to manage your time efficiently and effectively. So maybe you could share some insight in regards to that.
I would say I've tried everything and failed tremendously at all the time management things. I think the best thing is just to prioritize and then ruthlessly cut out everything else.
Gotcha.
Like, it's no, if it's for me, it's like playing football. And going to school, like that's just your life. My coaches say ball, school, and that's kind of how it has to be if you want to do things you're passionate about. But the fact that you're passionate about them should be more than enough for you to be happy while you do them. I'm having fun, you know. All these things are just like being on here talking to you is just an incredible time. It's something I won't forget because it's just so fun. So.
Well, you know, that's the thing about optometry, and I have conversations every day in my exam lane with kids. Every student that walks into my office, I tell them about how great this profession is. And I actually have one of my team members today. I have a technician. She is fantastic, very bright, gets it. The personality she has, the bedside she had, manner she has, you can't teach that. So I told her today, I said, I know you're looking at doing something else, but have you really thought about optometry? And she told me straight up, I don't want to just look at eyeballs, Dr. Glover. I said, it's not just that. I said, optometry can really be a foundation to something else. Like, look at me, for example. I started seeing patients, examining eyes, one or two in the exam lane. Now I'm a part of the leadership team at My Eye Doctor. Now I host and a co-founder of the number one optometry podcast in the world. I'm also a co-founder of a nonprofit. There's so much that you can do leveraging optometry as a foundation and growing it into something special. You just got to want it and you got to see the opportunity that's in front of you. So for anyone that's out there that's listening, like you were, we chatted earlier prior, right? You used to listen to this before you got accepted to optometry school. Reach out to me, reach out to Easy, reach out to Dr. Harbir Sayan, reach out to Dr. Fez Magoob, all the people that are listening and tuning in on this podcast. Reach out to Nathan and have a conversation. Let them tell you that it's not just flipping dials one or two. You can do that if you would like, but there's a medical component. There's a retail component. There's a teaching component. There's a leadership component. There's a people component. There's so much to this amazing profession. Do not sell yourself short.
Absolutely. You know, I think people don't. I think every OD has gone through. Done a little bit of chairside therapy. So that's got to count for something. You know, there's a lot of roles you play. And then there's something to be said for thinking about the eyeball versus thinking about vision. Like,
yeah,
someone's entire world you're responsible for. And I like that is just incredible to me.
It's priceless. Priceless, man. Absolutely. Well, Easy, man. We got to get some advice from you, man. If you could, you know, give yourself, your younger self, I should say. I know you're still young, my friend, but your younger self, some advice. What would it be, man?
I think it would be stay true to yourself. I don't think I had trouble with that before, but I think just stay confident, stay true, and trust that whatever you believe in, God, the universe, your parents, whatever they put in you, and that's good enough. But more so, that's going to be very useful in the future. Like, it's going to be very good for the world. I think that's what I tell myself. Like, don't worry about change yourself to be better, but don't worry about changing what your interests are, your passion, or how you do things. Just try to find a way to make it work, and then keep finding people who like love you and just love your presence, and stay around them, because that energy is going to keep you going no matter what. Like, it'll just keep you going.
I love that. And I mean, essentially, it's truly just being understanding of what your purpose is, right. And then, you know, making sure that you surround yourself with the right community, the right village, right. Because there will be some folks that will tear you down. Let's just Absolutely. Be real and keep it real. You know what I'm saying? Yep. So you just want to make sure that you have those positive vibes around you to help elevate you and grow you in your career. So staying true to yourself is real. But also something I want everyone to keep in mind that, you know, staying real and true to yourself does not mean that you can't pivot.
Right.
Yeah. There are times where you have to pivot and understand the difference between the two, because there's a huge difference. Right. But just make sure that you do stay true to who you are as a person. I think that's sound advice, especially for the younger generation, because you're getting pulled in all kinds of ways. You got social media. You got someone over here yapping. You're taking tests, so your mind may not be there. So you're going to go with the first thing that someone tells you. Right. So just stay true to yourself, man. That's fantastic advice. Now,
yeah, I was going to say, I think that, yeah, who you are, not what you do. Ooh. I might, in the end of the world, I might not do any AI or 3D print things, but I'll still be an emerging tech because I just love that next innovative thing, the daring challenge of it. So
I love it. And you know, I know you're a leader in our space, and I'd love for you to maybe just leave us with an action or a charge to the optometric community. If you could leave one message with them, what would that be, Easy?
It would be embrace optometry and embrace everyone in the profession. So embrace where it's headed, embrace all the things that are coming, be fearless and just enjoy it. And then the next is just have great people around you and go through it with them. I think that's what it'd be. No fear, no negativity. No one likes a pessimist or beliefs are self-fulfilling. Be an optimist about optometry.
I love it. Teamwork makes the dream work. Absolutely. No doubt about it. And as a community and as a family and as a profession, we're the pulse of healthcare. What we do will impact healthcare. And if we're impacting healthcare, we're impacting the world. And the world is on our shoulders as eye care professionals. We're the only ones that see live blood vessels and can diagnose so many things by just looking at the eye. What are you going to do tomorrow when you step in that exam lane? What kind of relationship are you going to have with that patient? What type of innovation and technology are you going to bring into your practice? How are you going to communicate with your team members? How are you going to communicate with your colleagues? Are you investing in your profession? Are you donating to the AOA? Are you partnering with the AOSA and being mentors and being leaders and helping them with those four touch points that Easy touched on earlier? You guys got some things to think about. Easy, I want to thank you so much, man, for coming on the show this evening. This has been fantastic. If anybody wants to get in touch with you and connect with you, what's the best way for them to reach out to you, my friend?
LinkedIn, or just email me at easy@odx.ai.
I love it, my friend. Thank you so much for being on the show. Shout out to everyone that tuned in this evening. This has been fantastic. Brilliant mind. My man, Easy, representing. Continue the great work. I can't wait to see where you're at. 2 years from now, 5 years from now, and 10 years from now, man, you'll probably be the president of the world, man. So continue the great work. Everyone out there, stay healthy, stay positive, and stay blessed. And until next time, peace.
Take care.
All right, colleagues, and it's a wrap. Thank you dearly for hanging out with the Defocus Media team. We hope truly something resonated with you. And if it did, be sure to give us 5 stars. And make sure you follow us on all social media platforms. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, you named it. And our handle is at Defocus Media on all platforms. And until next time, be sure to keep it 2020. And we look forward to seeing you on the next episode.